Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
Welcome to my podcast, where we are going to talk about a lifestyle with dogs and throw in a few life lessons along the way. Whether you're a hound hunter, bird dog enthusiast, running setters, pointers, retrievers, or a flat-out running dog junkie, this podcast is for you. I am your host, Heath Hyatt, a certified law enforcement canine trainer with over 3 decades of personal and professional training and handling experience. It's time for me to pay it forward. So grab your leads, lace up those boots, and come and join me on this lifelong process of teaching, training, and learning. Are you looking to unlock your dog's full potential and give them the best nutrition possible for peak performance? Then look no further. Anookshuk has what you're looking for. Anookshuk's nutrient-dense formulas are crafted to keep your dog's energy high and performance top-notch. Packed with premium proteins and essential fats, Inukshuk delivers the balanced nutrition your dog needs to thrive. From hunting dogs to police canines, Inukshuk is trusted by professionals. Give your dog the power of peak performance with Inukshuk Professional Dog Food. Everybody knows that the weather affects our hunting. And it doesn't matter if you're hunting with hounds, if you're hunting, you're just a still hunter, you're bird hunting. It even affects my fishing. Yesterday, I spent five hours out on the river, and I went through a phase where the bite was pretty good, and then it closed off, and the wind picked up, and everything just shut down. So weather. And we're going to talk about weather today. And first and foremost, I got to say, it was kind of neat yesterday. It was my birthday, and thank everybody for reaching out and the birthday wishes. Couldn't have a better day. But yesterday morning when I got up and my phone popped up, our guest had the same exact birthday. And I only know two people, me, Stefan Yu, and Hunter Davis. We call him Precious because he's precious. He's soft. We call him Precious. But that's the only other people I know with the same birthday. So I thought that was a pretty good, that was pretty neat when you text, and I seen your name pop up, and you text, I'm like, yeah, man, just different years is all.
Yeah. I thought it was ironic, that's for sure.
Yeah, especially I knew I was going to talk to you today. So anyway, I know I wished you happy birthday yesterday, but again, man, that's pretty cool. But we have Stefan Roque on from Wyoming. And for you guys that don't know, I'm just going to give you a really brief summary and why he and I are going to talk about weather. So Stefan was a professional firefighter, hot shot, what do they call it, wildland firefighter for 11 years. And that is extremely important that he knows the weather, the classes that he set through, the education that he had to get on all things weather-related and how it affects his job. He's now a police officer, so we kind of run in that, the same realm there. And 20 years of a hound hunting. So, man, what a better way to talk about weather and elements and, just everything that goes into the environmental effects of hunting. So did you have a good day yesterday?
I did, man. My oldest daughter is playing rugby. So her first 15s match was down in Colorado, and we went down there and watched her game, and her team won. And so after that, we just kind of hung out, did a little bit of hanging around, went to eat, somewhere nice to eat. And then we came home. So it was kind of a long day, but it was nice.
Yeah, I can't complain. I spent the day, me and Maddie went fishing. Caught two pretty, the bass are still, I'm fishing on the river, and I was just bass fishing yesterday. Muskies are spawning, so I let them be for about a month. But I caught two nice, I caught a 17 and a 19. And like I said, it was kind of a window. That was within about an hour window that I caught them. And then after that, everything kind of shut down. We did get sunburnt. Spent too much time in the sun and didn't have anything, but yeah, come home, had a really nice supper. They fixed me a big steak dinner, which is my favorite. And now, guys, I love strawberry. Strawberries are one of my things, and I love strawberry cake. So Tegan and Brogan had made me a cake. I don't think Kenna actually contributed to any of this other than eating it. But, yeah, so it was a good day. I can't complain. I fished Friday. Two days of fishing, and we finished up volleyball season today with a banquet. So yeah, that was my weekend, and can't complain.
That sounds good. Yeah, I took the dogs out after shift on Friday and spent most of the day on the mountain, and then came back and had to do a few things around here. And then, obviously the birthday was yesterday. So, yeah. And
Now,
just to clarify, so we don't stir the wrong crowd, I was the 11 years that I was in wildland, I was on Type 2 IA crews and an engine. I did not do any time or anything like that with the hotshot crews. So any of you hotshot boys that are listening, I did not was not a hotshot.
my bad, my bad. I
Oh, it's
had
okay.
wrote that down.
It's
Yeah.
okay.
Yeah. Well, let's talk. Let's just start out the conversation with you and I started talking back and forth when, if you guys remember, I think I was down at BB's back in November. Yeah, it had to be November. And I brought it up on a podcast. I said, we had crossed from we'd went from Virginia into North Carolina to we were going down to Doug's to meet him. And the layers of fog, like there was three different layers of fog that we drove in, and it was almost like, I mean, you could see the different layers. And you had texted me about that, and we got to having a conversation. So, just roll into that and tell me, what you had said, how it captures odor, and kind of how that weather. How the fall works and affects things.
Okay, yeah, I'll try and remember. I should have reviewed it so it refresh my memory, but I'll do my best. So I believe you were talking about like kind of wondering at what point when you're in that type of situation where you have good or decent sending conditions, and then all of a sudden it just goes to crap, right? And I believe I text you. It's the level of saturation, and it sounds super scientific. And it sounds kind of nerdy, and it really isn't. To break it down into simple terms, because most of us hounds guys try to be simple folk. The way fog comes in, you have a nice rainy storm. We'll just talk about rain because it's a simple concept. You have a good, nice, heavy rain or just whatever it is that day. It comes, it passes. Right. And then you get nice, good, solid convection heating from the sun. It's super warm that day. And then all of a sudden, you get rapid cooling from the surface. Okay. So it's that evaporation. And it's just cooling rapidly, then at a higher rate than it normally does. So it cools off real fast in the night. And then all of a sudden, there's so much moisture, it doesn't really have a place to go per se. And then it just kind of sits and forms the fog. Okay. Or also, I mean, fog is moisture. It is, and really, it's kind of where you get the dew point and the dry bulb wet at meet at the same spot, and it's super wet, right? That's why when you touch vehicles that have been sitting in a fog or whatever, and they're kind of wet, the window gets wet. That's kind of the concentration of moisture at that point. So, what I was telling you, and what I meant in that situation was, your water essentially dilutes that scent. And that's the best word that I have found to use in that scenario, because scent is so complex in itself. And trying to understand how scent works, how lion, how bear, how bobcat or fox or whatever a guy hunts, how they transfer that scent to, say, rocks, plants, trees, all the things on the mountain or wherever you're hunting, and how long they stay there in that situation for whatever time frame until you arrive with said dogs, right? And so that fog was just kind of saturating and diluting that scent to the point where your dogs may be able to pick it up. They may. I think there is a, they can smell it, but I think honestly,
Well,
go ahead.
I was going to say what I had commented is that I could not remember ever rigging a track in the fog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you had mentioned that if you put your dogs down, you would have a better chance on the ground.
You do. You have a better chance. Again, I wouldn't, me personally, knowing my dogs, I run on the ground anyways. I don't ever rig. That's mainly because I lion hunt exclusively. Can I rig a lion? Maybe. I don't know. I haven't tried it. But just understanding how, because as we know, animals walk closer to the ground in general, right? And so I think those scent molecules that are left on the ground, you would have been able to pick them up because of that distance in the fog from the ground. Now there's that the inversion factors was, I think I mentioned that too, where mm-hmm. you don't have to have a rain come in. And this happens in the wintertime too, where you have evaporation or convection heating from the surface moving up to the atmosphere or the stratosphere, troposphere, whatever. And it's just cooling off fast, and then you get a nice crisp cold night and it kind of caps it off. And you can see that smoke layer just sitting. Well, I call it smoke layer because most of the time in the wintertime, folks are running fireplaces, right? And so that mm-hmm. that smoke has nowhere to lift. So it just lifts to that cap level and then kind of does a 90 and just sits there all mm-hmm. night long. And then early morning, you're coming over top of the mountain, you're coming down, you see it. You're like, oh, that's an inversion level. But then once as the sun comes up, solar heats the ground, you get that convection heating, breaks the inversion. Now you're back up to an unstable atmosphere, and then everything else lifts. So then you start, everything begins its process again. There is that level that I've noticed that, and I've seen it, where you have that inversion level at X amount of feet above the ground. And then you have down on the surface level, which would be your roadways or your ground or whatever. I noticed it occasionally, depending on how much moisture is in the air, has an effect, but also doesn't have an effect. And I know that's not like a hard and fast answer, but there is no hard and fast answer, really, when we're talking about scent, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What, and weather, really, yeah. too.
Yeah, no, it does. And, you know, you and I had a brief conversation before we started recording. Like, you know, just when you think you have things figured out, you're scratching your head like, well, okay, this happened. It's all happened before, but there's definitely something different in there that's causing, you know, the dogs to do a certain thing or act a certain, you know, pick it up or not pick it up, run it harder, trail it harder, whatever. And, you know, that makes me wonder, and I'm going to go back to a couple weeks ago. I taught one of my tactical tracking classes, and mm-hmm. every morning before the class, I check the weather on the way to wherever we were meeting. And you guys know that we incorporate our dogs into this class, and I actually had several other handlers from different agencies that actually joined the class. So we were canine heavy on this one, which is fine. But the first day after classrooms, for our first day in the field, I asked them, I was like, okay, what's your dew point? And nobody's got an answer. And I'm like, okay, what's your humidity? Nobody has an answer. And I'm like, all right, what's your temperature increase or decrease today? And nobody had an answer. And it dawned on me when me and you were talking that, like, I do this every day. Like, it's almost out of habit now. Like, when I'm going to the woods, boom, I hit my weather, I'm looking at dew point, because you just talked about that. When everything's wet outside, the gravel roads are wet, they're moist. And when the atmosphere starts to heat up and you come out of the woods and you can't see in front of you because of the dust, all that stuff's lifted. I guess that's the right reason. I'll ask you in just a second. But every day that I go hunting, I check and I'm not so much on the barometric pressure because, like you and I said, I don't have to look at an app to tell. I can kind of look at the atmosphere around where I'm, you know, unless it's dark. I kind of know what's going on with the barometric pressure, but I'm checking the humidity. I'm checking the dew point, and I want to know how much that temperature is going to rise or fall during that day, because if it's over 20, 25 degrees, it really puts a hindrance on the tracking ability for me. Now, it may not be everybody, but it definitely affects what my hounds do and how they operate. So what's your take on that?
I guess, you know, my take on that, Heath, is, you know, I do as well pay attention for multiple reasons to those, you know, the temp for the day, the humidity for the day. I started tracking the barometric pressure. I can't remember the gentleman's name that was down in in Africa. It might have been South Africa. He did a podcast with Chris Powell years ago, and it got me thinking.
Gavin. It was Gavin.
Okay. I thought it was Gavin. Yep. I didn't want to say the wrong person, but so I started tracking it. But then at the same time, I'm also an individual where if the conditions aren't extreme enough, such as I have a 60 mile an hour day, I'm going to do it anyways. You know, because I just I'm trying to play both sides of the field here, where, you know, talking to the folks that are interested in learning this stuff. And then, you know, you do have an audience as well where it's like, phooey, you know, just hunt anyways. Yeah, there's some to that too. There is some to that too. But I mean, I'll talk to the folks that are kind of nerdy like us. So, there is a point, and it's not a hard number for me, where the humidity is a bit too much, and I just sit there and we just spin our wheels. The factor for me and where I live is the wind. The wind dictates everything for me. Just because I have, said 35 degree day, doesn't mean I'm going to get a 35 degree day. If I have a 20 to 30 mile or 40 mile an hour wind that day, you plug that into the calculations and it's going to be, well, you have a 35 degree day. You should expect with a 30 to 40 mile an hour wind, it's going to feel like closer to the single digits or zero. Right. So then that dictates that'll dictate everything else. Now, to kind of help paint a picture to folks, the type of area or habitat that I'm hunting in on the north side of the slopes, and we've been struck with fires, wildfires for a long time. And so a lot of the stuff is barren, but typically in the areas that are not barren, you have your northern slopes where you have all your conifers, like your spruce, your alpine, your subalpine pines on the northern slopes. Okay. And then outside of that, if you go on the southern slopes, I have brush, I have dirt, I have granite rocks, I have all kinds of different style habitat. I've got cliffs, I've got all kinds of stuff. So in the wintertime, I go from snow on the north side, and depending on the time of the day or whatever, how long a storm system has gone through. If I hunt as soon as the storm systems come through, obviously I'll have snow on the southern side. If it's been a while since a storm has been there, I won't have snow at all on the southern side. So I'll have frozen ground. So then what happens is that wind will expedite how long that sense available for my dogs to come through and pick it up. So I'm not really saying that time is of the essence and that kind of thing, because you can't predict when a lion's going to cross or when he's going to go through his territory, but you can try and do your best. I do like making circles on foot. I'm currently without a horse. I'm looking for a horse to help make bigger loops, like your 15-mile loops, especially during the dry ground season that's coming up. But I'm also not afraid to walk on foot either. So, again, your day temp, and a lot of folks get this mixed up too, and I understand why, because for some reason, somewhere down the line, we're like, maybe it's the old Westerns. Well, let's meet at high noon. Okay, well, high noon and typical, you know, and I get I can't think of the proper word, but high noon is typically where some folks or most folks think that that's the hottest time of the day. And that is not accurate. The hottest time of the day is 4 p.m. And then all the way around to the coldest time of the night is 4 a.m. That's when you start seeing that. So it may feel, and I get it, the sun's sitting right above you, especially like in the summertime, and you're like, man alive, it is hot. Man, it's hot. It can't get any hotter. Well, it's going to get a little bit hotter, and it depends on how much more it's going to climb that day. So that can play a factor into it as well. And you see a lot of the folks down in the Southwest, they usually see heat faster than we do up here. I mean, I'm at 7,200 feet versus, you know, they're anywhere from 6,000 and below, in a different region of the U.S. And that's what I also want to mention too, to folks, is in different regions of the U.S., weather is vastly different in some spots than others. And that's okay. Understanding that and knowing, like, say, the PNW, for example, the Pacific Northwest, in some regions of that, if you're closer to the coast, you could possibly see more moisture, and you most likely are. So then you're dealing with having to ride that line of, am I at the right RH level or the humidity level to get out and potentially start catching something? Whereas, like, you go to the Southwest, and if you're sitting at their RH levels, it's monsoon season. And then you go to the Midwest, then you go to the East, and you guys are always, and I've been out to the Midwest. I've been to Minnesota. I've been to Wisconsin, Ohio. I went on a fire assignment down along the Florida, Georgia line, and I got to experience fire, in that habitat. But boy, I'm telling you, that humidity out there it's no joke. And so I do think it's conditioning your dogs to that area and that humidity too. But, you know, just like you, Heath, you know, I do like to travel and hunt when I can. And so I'll kind of jump ahead and look at, like, consistent or historical temperatures and historical humidities in that specific month for that, like, state, to kind of get an idea of what to expect. And I know I apologize, I kind of digress from your question, but that's essentially what I do, even with big game too.
Yeah, no, I'm like I said, I guess it's just habit of so many years of canine training and having to log in my notes, in my training log, in my deployments, you know, weather, humidity, you know, the app that we're using, it pretty much does it itself. But I'm still looking at it when I get out to do a track. Like, I want to know. And you talked about high noon, and I don't know how it affects you guys, but man, when that sun's directly overhead here, if you're not staying in the wood line with some shade, like, we're not catching people now. And I'm talking about people hunting now. I'm not talking about, you know, critters. Like, you're hard pressed unless you just get them contained into an area and the dog ends up doing an open area search, which is completely different than tracking. You know, you're using the blown body odor to locate the individual versus the skin rafts and some ground disturbance, because that's all in the same scent picture, to actually track them up. So it's completely different. But yeah, when you say high noon, that was the first thing come to my head. I'm like, gosh, man, I don't like tracking out I don't like tracking from that, 12 to 4. Like, it's the worst part of the day
for me.
Now, December is a little bit different. And then this is where I wanted you to go into a little bit of depth when we talked about, the compass, the north, the west, the east, the south. You had the north, we all know, is the cooler, and I think you said it's a cooler, more wetter side of the mountains. And then we go to the south. So just break each direction down, and how the sun and actually the earth tilting affects that.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we all learned this in science class. You know, this is really nothing new. And for some people, they're probably even tracking it as well. But this is nothing new. This is still like basic science class, like high school. We all know that the earth rotates on its axis. Okay. We'll just start with the summertime. The degree at which it's tilted is why we are so warm in the northern hemisphere. Okay. Yeah, we're closer to the sun. Okay, so then still, like he said, your northern slopes are going to be cooler and have more moisture. Okay. Moisture can also be taken out of context of like, well, it's always raining there, it's always snowing there. Not particularly. What I'm talking about moisture is your humidity levels are going to be higher, like in the summertime, on the northern side of the slopes versus the east, the south, and the west. Okay, as the Earth continues its rotation, okay, when we start shifting towards fall, and then we shift towards winter. Now, if you can imagine with me, we're rotating now. Now the southern hemisphere of the world is seeing summer, okay? And then we're in winter. So now there's even less sunlight on your northeast, northwest parts of the mountain. And now the east, southeast, south, southwest, and parts of the west are seeing all that sun, okay? The general rule of thumb is the southern part of the slope will always see the most amount of sunlight. Therefore, sometimes those conditions can be very difficult to move through. Not all the time. Obviously, time of day that animal moved through that specific area, the temp, the humidity for the day, all those things do play a factor. And so then the cycle begins itself again as we enter into spring and so on and so forth. And so to help kind of bring this full circle, understanding that can help you kind of get a better idea as to what all is going on, right? And hopefully that makes sense for people to understand, but I try to make it super simple, or as simple as possible, and not be very confusing for folks to understand. And really, at the end of the day, the more you know, the better. And yeah, you still have to get out there and get it done, no matter what it is. I mean, I do know, some folks, if it's raining hard out, you're probably not going to go and try and catch a bear or a lion. But you still got to get out and try it. But if you understand how everything is working in relation to your weather, B, better understanding of the game you hunt. I think that's super important. And I do this also with big game. Read up on them. Ask a lot of questions to your mentors as far as like how lion behave. How do they move? Why do they make scratches? Why do they do what they do? Continue to learn. Read up on that stuff. And like I said, ask those mentors. That way you have a better understanding of the game you're hunting. And then conversely, on the other side, if what you don't know, you don't know. And, I don't consider myself a know-it-all. I never will. I'm always trying to keep an open mind to learning. I learn new things every day. Hell, I even learned quite a bit of things on Friday when we were out cold trailing all day. But the more you understand the weather as well can also possibly help you. I'm not going to sound like a meteorologist on here and be like, well, if you have these conditions on this day, you should be able to catch, or you're going to be able to catch. And we all know we're a big fan of meteorologists, right? Because if they say it's going to rain, it doesn't rain. So
it's the only job you can get wrong consistently and keep your job.
That's right.
Yeah, but, and, you know, I go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
No, I was just saying, you know, I just kind of, while you were talking, I kind of drew the top of a mountain and I labeled it north, northeast and northwest, and then I done south, southeast, and southwest. So I'm sitting here looking at this visually now, and it seems like to me the south, well, and it depends on where the sun's at too, overhead. You know, the southeast would probably get the most sun considered, mm-hmm. and then your southwest would be a little bit better if you were on the south side of things. And if you're on the north side of things, I don't know how east and northeast and northwest really breaks up unless it's the time of day, which side of the, which, like you said, is a very short window for the north side, where it would be much difference in whether you was west or east on the north. But I do see I can see a drastic, you know, just sitting here visualizing it, I see a, where it could be a drastic difference in the southeast side versus the southwest side.
Yeah. So most of the, I mean, in the basic terms, storms usually travel west-ish to east, right? So your western part of this, that mountain range, you get a lot of that cloud cover and that storm built up first. And by the time it reaches the eastern side, depending on how strong that system is, we'll see less moisture, if that makes sense, right? Now, again, the more you understand about weather, the better. There are times, if I know if I have a northwest wind or a north wind, there's this low pressure system coming in. So then, you know, I'll jump up. I got tools that I use. I'll go to the NOAA website, which is the National Weather Service website. I'll go on there and I got a tap save and I'll click the water vapor. And all that water vapor is telling me is how strong, really how much moisture is in that specific system. Okay. So then I kind of expect, okay, we are probably going to get some moisture out of this. And so I just note it is all. But the storm systems will come down from the northwest. So you're hitting all that northwest side and sometimes the east too. And then it's moving through and then it's coming up. And sometimes they can roll right behind the jet stream. Okay. And then they'll go back out. Our systems do that in a sense where they're coming down from like Idaho to the northwest part of the state down to us, and then they'll go right out to Nebraska and all the plains states and stuff, and then it's just tornado season, or if it's winter then it's blizzards. And I mean, we get some nasty blizzards here all the time in the winter too. But another point as well is when I worked here for the Forest Service when doing fire, all of our fires were in the southern end of our district. And we always asked the question, why don't we ever get fires on the northern end of the district? And that's because there was a lot more moisture tied to the northern end of the district. We take fuel samples. Now I'm getting really nerdy. So I apologize to you folks. I don't mean to, but so what we'll do is we'll take pine needles off the, say, spruce, ponderosa pine, limber pine. We'll put them in a can. And I'm making this super short. There's a lengthy process-ish to kind of understand how you draw how much moisture is in each specific tree species to give you an idea of what critical level they are at or not at, right? We take samples from the sagebrush, so basically they're little leaves, and then we take what we call cookies or rounds out of your 1,000-hour fuel, which are your dead trees. And so it's something like a 6 or 8 inch tree. We'll cut a little cookie out and we put it in an oven. Well, obviously we weigh them while they're quote unquote wet, put it in an oven, cook them out, take them out, weigh it. We got a cheat sheet. We run it and it gives us all our data as to how much moisture is in it. What we found was there's a lot more moisture tied to the northern end of the district than there was the eastern and southern ends. Right. So your question, like you were saying, you know, it makes sense on the east and the south end of it, and that quadrangle, if we want to break it into fours. But yeah, the reason why there's a touch more moisture in the west and the north is depending on which direction those storms are coming from. Obviously, down in the southwest during monsoon season, you're getting all that moisture push from the Pacific Ocean and the Gulf of Mexico coming right up. And so they're getting all that moisture just rolling right up in, and that's how you're getting that all that moisture. So that does play a part into, like, you know, maybe challenge some guys. Those seasons hit, go take a look, go try it. After a couple of days it's dried or whatever, go see if you can trail and see what happens. If you get trailing or cold trailing, see what happens where it starts to get better trailing versus not better, and then so on and so forth. And maybe it makes sense, maybe it doesn't. And there are nothing is really hard and set in stone per se, Heath. But there are variables, and variables often in times kind of throw us for a loop, right? And usually those are our learning lessons.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, you think you have it figured out, you know. And I just throw random numbers out. So it's 78 degrees this morning and humidity is at 80%. And I go out and my dew point is fairly low. Let's just say it's in the 30s. And, you know, your dogs strike good, trail good, boom, catch a bear. And then 2 weeks later, you go out with pretty much the same numbers, maybe a degree or two off here or there. And it's like they're standing on their head. It's like, what is different? What, you know, and I, you know, what Gavin said, you know, to elaborate a little bit about what he had said, you know, when you got a day to hunt, you got to hunt. And mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what the barometric pressure says. And that doesn't matter. You know, the only two things that stop me, and we talked about this, is the wind. And here's my explanation why. When you start pushing, you know, over 20 to 30 mile an hour winds. I've been in the woods. I've been way back in the woods as a younger me, and limbs falling, trees blowing over. And again, this is after a big storm. So, you know, I'm adding those variables in there. And, you know, it was all I could do to get back to the truck and get out of there before something fell on me. And so wind is just a no-no for me. Like, it's a safety issue more than it is I can't hunt. It's a safety issue for me. And then the other thing is when you get a frozen snow, like when the snow freezes over, you know, it just cuts my dog's feet all to pieces and the dogs can't get good footing. I actually had a dog get killed in this type of weather. And this has been years. Golly, geez, that's been 20 years ago. Well, maybe, yeah, 20 years ago. And I have ran in snow. I'll take it all day long. But when it's frozen or crusted over, I know that if I put my dogs out in it, I'm done for a couple of days because I've got to let their feet heal. So there's the two weather conditions and rain. I'm not – if it's a mist or a light rain, I'm okay with it. But once it starts – downpouring or monsoon raining, I don't like walking through the laurel in wet, soaking wet clothes. So again, that's a me thing more so than it is a dog thing. But that's my stuff with the weather. I watch it, and I hunt when I'm off because that's my days off. But I have, Stefan, one thing I've been really watching this past year, I watched it extremely close, was the humidity. And you talked about it being here. Our humidity, I think if I go back through my log, I think there was only a handful of days, and I'm going to say less than 5 days, that we hunted during training season, which is our August and September, that the humidity was under 80%. Most mornings in August, it was at 90 or above. So we talk about the safety issue for the dog, like the dog pants to sweat. And when there's more moisture in the air than he's trying to release out of his body, he cannot release that moisture. And it's just a huge, huge safety factor for the dog. So mm-hmm. I'm the one that, you know, I'll let my dogs run an hour or so, maybe two, and then I'm doing everything I can to catch them. Like, I'm cutting them off. I don't care. They could be tied to the bear's hind end and come across the road. If I can get my hands on them, I'm going to catch them because I don't want them to have heat exhaustion or heat stroke.
Yeah, that's a big thing, man. You know, I noticed that personally when I went on that fire assignment down the Florida Georgia state line there. I noticed I mean, it was, I loved it. I loved seeing, I love seeing fire behave in that habitat and just watching it 2-3 days later, it was back to green up. And I was like, man, it don't happen like this where I'm from. But at the same time, like it was like 95, 100 degrees, 101 to like 95% humidity. And every time we got out of that engine to go patrol or, you know, do some mop up or whatever, I was like, good God, I don't know how these guys do it over here. But to tag on to what you're saying, I had to drink a lot more water because of that to stay hydrated so I wouldn't get dehydrated. In the same facet, I still have to drink decent amount of water in the wintertime. Just because you're not hot and sweating as much in the summertime as you are in the wintertime, depending on how much you have on, doesn't mean that you can still get dehydrated. And so I also treat my dogs in a similar fashion as well. Not that I'm a shameless plug, I guess, but I feed my dog supplements, and the company I use is Alpha Dog Nutrition. And so when we get home, so like on Friday, I get home, perfect time for them to eat dinner. They get all the supplements, like make sure they get their recovery stuff. I view my dogs as athletes. I mean, I understand and I respect folks that don't want to feed that or don't believe in it. And that's fine. But I do. And I also come from kind of a world where horses are, I mean, we have horses. My daughter has 3 horses right now, and she's doing 4-H and rodeo and stuff like that. But we're kind of doing the same thing, right? If you want those animals to perform at their best performance, you really want to make sure that they have everything they need. So that's kind of what I do. I do believe in hydration. I do believe in and making sure you get everything right as well.
Yeah, I use the Alpha Dog. I mean, they do sponsor I do the glycerol. I bait my water, especially during those humid times, and get some glycerol in them. And I use the maldextrin. I got it. In fact, it's sitting on my feed table downstairs right now. So I'm with you, and the more you dig into things, and the more serious, and I'm not saying people don't take it serious, but your dogs are a fine-tuned athlete. That's what they should be. And, you know, they just can't, it helps to have stuff like that can enhance their performance. Just like, you know, you would, if you were an Olympic, if you were in the Olympics, you know, you would be doing everything to help your body, nourish your body, treat your body to do those things. So I'm, you know, Stephen, I'm with you. Like I said, I use the same stuff. I believe in it. I see a difference in my dog's performance. The recovery is what I see the best, like the recovery time, you know, being able to hunt them day in and day out. That's the one thing that I see the biggest takeaway with what we're talking about. So, and the glycerol, like I said, the glycerol allows them to run a couple degrees cooler. But again, that's for, you know, I'm not out there running them all day long either. I'm just doing an hour. I'm basically at this point just trying to get them, just get them some exercise in and exercise in and exercise in. So
yeah,
I'm with you.
It, you know, and you know, kind of how I do it, Heath. And listen, man, we live, and you understand it. We live in I guess let's call it the modern era. You have guys that are working full-time jobs to work their, to hunt their weekend. So essentially they're working for the weekend, right? You have guys that are hunting every day. You have, I mean, you have all the in-betweens and stuff like that, right? You know, I work in an 11 and a half hour shift. There's some, you know, during the kill season, I'm leaving work and I'm going out. And if I don't find anything, that's my hard line. I'll come back and get some sleep and then go to work. But then on my days off, I'll have, depending on the week, I'll have 3 or 4 days off. You know, I'm hunting those days exclusively, right? And then there's no hard lines other than a 60, 70 mile an hour wind day where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to stay home and, you know, do some things around the house or whatever I have going. But, you know, it, you just, I think for guys, you kind of have to, not to digress from the weather conversation, but you got to decide at the end of the day what type of dogs that you want to have and be okay with that and not let anybody stick a finger in your face and say, well, you are not, you're not anyone or anything because a guy hunts two days out of the week and that's all he can do. You know, it's, I mean, it, I'm sure they'd love to hunt every day. I'm sure they would.
We've all been there. I mean, we've all been there and done that. Like, you know, when I first started, I mean, I had weekends off. I had 2 weeks of vacation. So 1 week of that was spent with the family, whatever the family was doing. And then the other week I tried to take off during hunting season. And then I had the weekends, which then you could only hunt, you know, still here, you can only run hounds on Saturdays. But, you know, back then I was, you know, deer hunting pretty avidly and everything else, but you only had the weekends. So you got to do what you got to do. And yeah, no, I get it. I mean, it's hard. It's a hard, you know, we're in that down period for us, you know, here it is the end of March. And, you know, I had my dogs really hadn't been out since season ended. And I went to the Grand American with Jason and Steve in January. So that was our last couple days of season. I was with them, so I didn't even run the last couple of days. And my dogs really hadn't been out other than out here in the yard, you know, fiddling around. And I told myself yesterday when I was feeding, I'm like, gosh, I got to get the dogs out. So, I mean, I can't hunt, but I need to get them out and let them exercise and, you know, be out and about, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. You know, especially nowadays, you know, again, with everything that's going on in the West, I sound like a broken record, and I'm really trying not to be, but everything that Colorado went through, that little kind of brief scare we did, and then kind of what Chris down there in Arizona and the gang are trying to help not happen, and everything in the PNW, like, you know, at some point we got to quit this. I believe it's been created through culture over the years where, you know, my area is tougher than yours, and I hunt more than you, and yeah, okay, that's fine. But if we, as houndsmen, we're kind of solo individuals anyways, and that's a known statement, but at some point we're going to have to try to at least find a common ground and reach a point where we can hold hands together, working towards a common goal where we can still hunt our dogs and still have these opportunities and privileges to do this thing. But instead we're getting caught up in some words that weren't said or words that were said that we take opposition on, you know. But hey.
Yeah, we do have the fights here in Virginia, not as bad as Colorado yet. It does concern me with our next batch of elections for Virginia, because our House and our Senate at state level is controlled by the left, and they would love nothing else than to just put a, you know, and we're the low-bearing fruit. We've heard everybody say it before, you know, hound hunting is a low-bearing yep. fruit. So mm-hmm. that's the first one we come after. And one of the hardest things for me, and I run into this last year, like I support all hunting. Like before I got into hounds, I was an avid bow hunter. I owned my own bow shop. Like if it was hunting season, I was in the woods with a bow or I was spring turkey. That was my two things that I loved. And I rifle hunted and I muzzleloading hunted, but if you give me a choice, bow would be my pick. And you know, I've hunted everything that I could legally hunt here in Virginia. Mm-hmm. I'm for everybody. But at some point in time, there has definitely been a shift. And like where I went from being a deer hunter to a hound hunter and hunting bear, I understand both aspects of it. Like I understand the deer hunting, I understand the bear hunting. But I think a lot of people that are on one side or the other, whether it be the bear hunter, dog hunter, let's just say dog hunters in general, or the steel hunters, like there is a very big divide in between, and they're going to come after us all. Everybody's got to understand that. So you have to try your best and to try to understand the other side of it, and mm-hmm. Take your mindset out of I'm against it. How can I support it? You know, that's the thing. Like how, you know, I don't care that somebody wants to go sit in a tree stand for 5 months and shoot a deer. It's not for me. I used to do it, but I have really no desire to do it now. But hey, man, if my neighbor over here wants to do that, I'm all for it. Like have at it. Like, you know, but don't try to take my stuff away either. I think all hound hunters feel that way. Just you can leave yeah. me alone. Just don't take my stuff. Yeah.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, here's the thing of it too, man. Like this same conversation has been had and is still being had with the deer hunters, the elk hunters, the upland hunters, the everything you can think of hunters. This conversation mm-hmm. that we're talking about, it's the same rhetoric. Even in the elk hunting world, I hunt more than you. Well, congratulations, good for you, you know, versus the guys that have a full-time job and when the season's open they go out and try to legally take whatever they can and take something home. It's mm-hmm. the same stage, just a different context. And I don't know, maybe that's a carryover. I don't know. I'm not going to and that's the thing too. Us as human beings, man, dude, we're really bad at pointing the finger at something and blaming so that we don't either have to stand and face the noise and deal with it as we can or as we should, or just stand up and just say, nah, I'm not about you taking that away from me. You know, that common ground is what I'm getting at.
Well, and you said something right there. I actually had this conversation last week with some of my buddies. The reason you're hunting more than me is because our deer season in Virginia is open almost six months. Yes, you have a lot more opportunity to go. My mm-hmm. season is my harvest season is only open 30 days. Mm-hmm. So I've got 30 days. I can't hunt on Sundays like you can. So that breaks it down. And then weather, because we get to hunt in December, weather affects at least a handful of days. So if I get to hunt 20 days out of those 30, like, I'm blessed. So, and I, like I said, we had this conversation, like, yeah, you're hunting more than me because you got 5-6 months to do it. I've got 90 days to run my dogs. 90 days. You got 6 months. You got 3 more months than I got. So, but yeah, I'm kind of getting on a soapbox there, but yeah, I'm with you. And like I said, we're having the same conversations throughout our state right now. Definitely the same thing. So,
yeah. Hey, Heath, let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
Sorry to circle back to weather. Have you, when you log your weather, mm-hmm. and you kind of pay attention to how things go, do you ever go back and look at the years that we in the U.S. are in a El Nino and seeing either how much more moisture or how much less moisture you're getting?
No, I haven't. And that actually came up 6 months ago in a conversation, and it, until you just said it, I had kicked it out the backside of my brain for some reason. But that would be very, and there's something else I don't do, is I haven't went back and looked at the historical data. Like, mm-hmm. I haven't done that, but that's something that maybe I should do. Like, maybe I'm going to write that down so I can start logging it, because like I said, the last 2 years, now I always write a log. Like, I'm always writing a log. And I always put temperature 78 degrees. And like I said, I was bad at leaving the humidity out. And then last year I started putting the humidity in. I'd look at it, but I wasn't logging it. So the last 2 years I have put every day that I've hunted in my log, I put the temperature and humidity. And if the dew point is high, I've been putting the dew point in there. So the last 2 years, I've got really good data on that. Now, I haven't put the wind. I haven't put that. I haven't put the wind in there. And I've kind of left the barometric pressure out. I look at it, but I haven't logged it because, like what you said, I got 5 days to hunt. I'm going to hunt regardless. Now, yes, I'm paying attention to it. Is it a high pressure? Is it low pressure? I guess that's something I should really start writing down, on the low pressure, am I being successful? Or on the high pressure, am I being successful? I need to write that. But that stuff can change, like, throughout your hunt, which, I mean, the humidity and stuff can too. But, like, yeah, I don't
it can,
know. But no, I'm going to do that.
It can change. I mean, your high pressure systems, that's basically your hot weather or your warmer weather, mm-hmm. in common knowledge or common terms for folks. And your low pressure systems, so your low pressure systems are also known as cold fronts or your storm systems, right? And so, mm-hmm. you know, the way they operate is they work counterclockwise and your high pressures are clockwise, you know, and prior to that system showing up, you're going to have high wind events. High wind events are relative to where you live and how much higher that wind will be. And when they leave, it's the same thing. The wind comes in again. So you're going to see temperature and RH fluxes in between those 100%. But you will also have not as high a fluctuation, I believe, when you're, say, you have a 5-day high pressure system that's just camping out. I think you'll see a very minimal bump in your humidity. In your humidity numbers when said, you know, those, it's in place for said amount of time. And the same, and conversely, the same on the low pressure system side. But I mean, that's just kind of it's just basic stuff. And I apologize, folks, for jumping around, but I just had to ask that question to you, Heath, because, you know, for here, we're in a La Nina pattern or a kind of a sort of a 50-50 split. But in a La Nina pattern here, we get stronger wind events and strong for this specific area in Wyoming is like 50, 60 mile an hour. So we're seeing that 70 to 80 mile an hour day. We had one a couple of weeks ago. It's very common. And so when El Nino rolls in, less wind, typically more moisture, and obviously everything has to do with ocean surface temperatures out in the Pacific for us. So I was just curious. At the end of the day, it doesn't necessarily really matter, but I was just curious, was all.
No, I haven't, but I wrote it down, and I'm definitely going to look at that this summer for sure. So I will say that we, unless I've just not paid attention to it, we've had, like, so last year we were camping on the river on 4th of July, and we had 70-mile-an-hour winds come through, which, what is it? That's right below hurricane, I think, 72 or 73 is, like, hurricane status.
Something like that.
We've had some really, like, we've had a lot more wind since then. Like, even through this winter, you know, January, February, it seems like we've had a lot more wind than I remember. Like I said, maybe I've just not been paying attention, but, like, it's been more, a lot more. So maybe you're on to something there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, sure, everybody has too, but I've noticed that some of the tornado seasons and the hurricane seasons are a bit more stronger than what they used to be, and some of them, unfortunately, are a lot more catastrophic.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, before we get off here, anything you want to leave us with? Any thoughts?
Nope. I just wanted to wish everybody good luck during whatever part of the season you're in or off season. Just because Heath and I talk about weather. I've done it before with Buddy and Jason, and some of you may have heard that, but I do wish the best for you all. Get out there, enjoy your dogs, enjoy the family time, and yeah.
All right, well, thank you a bunch for helping us teach, train, and learn.
You're welcome. Thank you, Heath, for having me on.
Do you like to be outdoors like I do? If so, unlock the wilderness with Onyx Maps. It is your ultimate guide to exploring, hunting, and conquering the great outdoors. With detailed maps, real-time tracking, and exclusive access to public and private lands, Onyx Maps is your key to adventure. Discover the possibilities and never get lost again with Onyx. So subscribe today using the promo code K920, letter K, number 920, and know where you stand.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/M365Copilot.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.